Like if we push on that too hard, it's going to fall apart. All right, now that's like that little armoire. But what happens if people come over to our house? At the beginning of March, I had a bunch of dudes who came over to my house, and what did we do? Or in the middle of March, we watched a bunch of college basketball. And what happened in front of that little thing? We got a lot of food. We had a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, a lot of, you know, shirt ripping. There was all kinds of hysteria going on based on basketball. Now, if a Buddhist or a Hindu walked into our house and saw that, they would regard the way in which we sit in front of the television as worship, because the way in which everything in that room finds itself around a TV. Now, if you look at statistics, we spend a ton of time in front of a TV. And so it's hard for us not to have this qualifier of, does this thing count as worship? Does this thing count as an idol? Does this thing qualify itself in the same way that a golden monkey would? And so there's a little thing that I came up with called the cling theory, and we're going to throw that on the screen for you. It's a series of questions that can tell if you've got an idol in your life, which aren't you glad we started here tonight? All right, so here's how the cling test goes. Who or what do you love most? First question, when we say love, what or who comes to mind? If we go to the second question, who or what captures your greatest passion? So when you give yourself to something, what gets the best? And then that's probably there. What do you think about by default, and what do you daydream about? All right, so when you were sitting in third period today, or when you were in that class after lunch, when you were sitting there dreaming of things that you dreamt upon, what was the thing by which you dreamed? Okay, so to what or whom are you most committed? It's just an easy one there. Who or what do you trust or depend upon the most? Number six is, where do you run for comfort when things go bad or get difficult? So when things start to look ugly, where do you go? What's the first thing you do when stuff goes bad? What do you do to cope, and what are your release valves? So when you get angry, or when you get upset, when you get whatever, what do you do to deal with that? Some of you have holes in your walls that have been how you cope and deal with things. Enjoy your medical bills. But how or what do you cope with? How do you do that? What, if you failed or lost it, would you feel that you would not want to live anymore? So what's that thing, if that just quit on you, if that just gave up, if that thing ended, what would you feel? Would you feel, man, I don't want to live anymore? What makes you feel the most self-worth? So what, when you succeed at, do you feel best about? Of what are you the proudest? What, if we looked at your Facebook page, what would you say over and over again? For what do you want to be known? When people say your name, what do you want them to say about you? And then who or what do you hope in or hope for most? And then what is your hope for the future? So what thing do you put your stock in? And the first blank we've got for you at the top to relate to this is that anything but God makes a terrible God. Anything but God makes a terrible God. It's blank number one. And so we'll say, if you put your hope in something that isn't God, it's a really terrible thing to put your hope in. Because ultimately, it's all going to disappoint you. Now, I've got four that I feel like will hit pretty close to home for a lot of you. And so I'm just going to walk through these four, and then we'll kind of see what goes from there. I feel like, first, a lot of you are putting a lot of stock in your body. So in what you look like, your appearance, how you dress. Now, is it a good thing to look good in public? Yes. Because no one wants to walk outside and look busted. All right? So I'm all about you taking a shower. And I'm all about you putting on deodorant. And I'm all about you being clean. Those are good things in life, right? But we can say that we do know people, or you are a person who puts way too much stock in your body. I mean, if you look in the mirror and dwell on you, you could be putting a ton of stuff into your body. And the truth is that your body's going to break down. Even if you're Superman, your body's going to fall apart. Let's take a perfect example. The Governator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, was Mr. Universe, which is like the best body in the universe. Now, obviously, we can't get outside of Earth, so there could be extraterrestrial life forms that have better bodies. But up into how we've been able to see, Schwarzenegger was Universe, all right? Austrian, I don't even speak English yet, Arnold was Mr. Universe. And if you've ever seen pictures of young Arnold, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous, okay? When you see him in Predator and he's lying in a tree covered in mud, hiding from a beast and using the mud to cool his body heat so he can try to kill it and save the world, man, Arnold has got Pooh. Now, fast forward. He's 60 now. Arnold's getting flabby up top. Right now, I don't know what he looks like with his clothes off, thankfully. But I can bet those pecs that once were extra ripply that he could, like, make do tricks, the pecs that he could make waves show up with, I bet they're starting to get a little saggy. And now they're actually making waves when he, like, lays up in bed. It's his body is going to deteriorate, right? Now, look. Arnold's put a ton of time into his body, a ton of time. But guess what? That body's going to break down and it's going to fall apart. And no matter how hard you hit the gym, eventually it's going to start getting old. None of us are beating the old thing. Even if we live to 120, guess what? We're going to be a saggy, wrinkly, busted up 120 years old. That's just the way it is. All right, so the next, I think, is some sports skills. And I said sports skills because that applies to a lot of you. But some of your club skills are extra good. Maybe your nunchuck skills, your bow hunting skills. All right, so your skills. Now, for some of you, you put a ton of time into your sports. And I'll say this, I've never seen sports require the amount of time it does right now. And I've been a part of really good sports teams. And I have a measure of sports skills. But I've never seen, what, who left? Michelle, elbow skill, quick. No, so sports skills, right? Now, as those things play out, right, you can dedicate hours to playing sports. Like what I hear about what sports require right now, I'd quit. I would just be like, this, because you have like one a days, two a days, nine a days. I mean, you've got like days that don't even count as days anymore, like the requirement of sports. And can I say this? You're not a professional. Right? And I know you get hit with the, if you don't do this, you're not going to play. Can I just be blunt with you? You got a better chance of being struck by lightning while being eaten by a shark than you do of making it in professional sports. All right? Lightning in the belly of a shark is the same odds that it is for you to make it in sports. Right now, do I say, like, hate sports? No, I'm not asking you to go stone your coach. But some of you are putting your hope in sports, right? And here's what I know. Even right now, like, I play some sports occasionally. I busted a three on a dude in his eyeball yesterday playing basketball. And it was awesome. Game winner in your face. Kobe Bryant on him. It was a three ball. Fade away, you know, there's like a 7-footer in my face. There's like 15,000 people watching. It was legit, right? So I've got sports skills. All the red team knows I've got sports skills. So those things happen. But what happens now? Man, if I go play sports, I have to stretch a lot beforehand. A lot. And I'm 27. Now, don't think I'm some old Cadillac, all right? 27, I've got to stretch a lot. And you know what happens when I go home? I got to start with a cold shower, and then I got to move into a hot shower, and then I got to put Icy Hot on nearly every one of my joints and take some ibuprofen, and I'm 27. And that's not even fake. If I go to sleep without doing any of those things, I may not be able to move. And some of you are like, that ain't going to be me. That's not, hey, listen, I had you beat, bro. I had you beat. Wind me back to 17, and I'd whoop all y'all in the street, all right? So say what you will. Say what you will. But sports skills, and so some of you are putting your hope in sports skills, but the odds are that the road is really short for you about how far that'll go. I mean, the odds are is that road will end really quick. And so if you put your hope in sports, that gets over when you graduate. Or that gets over when you go to a college. That gets over when you go pro. Now, I've got a friend of mine. His name's John Call. He's 6'4", and when he was at his football playing weight, he was 310 pounds, which is a lot. All right, that's like a foot on me, or an inch on me, and like 95 pounds. No, it's not. A number there. We'll just pick a number. So he had some on me. Now, he was slated when he graduated from college. He had tryouts for four NFL teams. So four play-ins before they were going to go to the NFL draft. And he quit when he got there. The reason why he quit? In playing in high school and in playing in college, he broke every major bone in his body. And there were games where he played where he had to have two casts on his hands because he was a lineman. And he said, I hate what's become of my body, and I'm 22 years old. And if you don't think that that's you, if you go to the NFL, ask any NFL player. And so the sports skills are there. And now what does he do? He works as a selling agent for a 24-hour fitness, which is basically he's a call man for a gym. And his hope was in sports. And look what happened when he got it fulfilled. His body just couldn't hang. So there's sports skills, popularity. I think there's a lot of stock placed on who knows you, if you're known, if people like you, how many friends you have on Facebook. And I'll go ahead and break it to you real easy. When you graduate, no one cares anymore. And then I know you feel like your people are going to care more because you're the class of 2011. There's been no class that has been like you. There's been no people who can accomplish what you can accomplish. There's been no song played like you're going to sing. There's never been anything in the entire history of the planet that's ever been like you are. But ask anybody in here who's graduated within the last 3 years and they'll say, yep, it still continues. Because when you graduate, everybody goes off and does their own thing. You don't see each other anymore, and you find out I didn't really like those people as much as we pretended to. And that's not being a jerk. That's just saying, I mean, do you really like 250 people? No. And so for me, I found there's two guys I talked to who I graduated with. In a class of 350, in a school of 1,200, there's two guys I talked to, and I was like popular, man. I mean, I had streamers for me in the school. People worshiped at my feet. I was so popular. Not really, but I had enough people who knew me, but there's two people who I say I talk to. One of them lives in town. He's been my best friend forever. Still my best friend. And then the other one is that guy who is a dropout from the NFL. Those two I talk to on somewhat regular basis. The one in the NFL guy, I mean, we see each other once a year, maybe. We talk sometimes. And so popularity, you could put your hope in people knowing you. But when that time runs out, when you're in high school, you're going to find that it's all over. And you got to start all over again. And then just wait till you get married because it gets way worse. And then the final one is a dating relationship. Now, anytime this one comes up, people always want to send me an email or a Facebook message saying how much I hate them. Because this is one of those things where I like rain on people's parades. But in all honesty, I'll fast forward this. I'm in a way better place with a relationship than any of you are. I'm married. All right, so you may have the best person on the planet. I've got you beat, all right? You may think that you have the sweetest honey baby that you've ever thought of. Got you beat, all right? And we've made a kid, so I've definitely got you beat. And so you look at a dating relationship, and you look at the way that that goes, and you look at the investment required of a dating relationship, and 99.999% of the time, it won't work. It's just going to fall apart. And, you know, we've done some recent looks at, you know, why do people come? Why do they stay? Why do they go? Do you know, we've lost more people in this room because of dating relationships than anything else. Whew. Shocker. Why? Because when you break up, you don't want to look at each other. And I even got done talking to somebody else who said they were in a relationship and they just can't stand seeing the person's face anymore. How old are you? And not like as a criticism, not like, what are you, seven? But I'm like, come on, you're 17 years old, and a portion of your life is I cannot look that person in the face. For real? Is that what you want to get to? And so we see how this begins to play out in just having like this, you're my everything, bourgeois. Like, I as a married dude, right? And I'll just say, I've got you beat. That's not from a place of arrogance. That's just truth. I've got you beat. I don't think I encourage people to vomit when they see the things that I say of my wife. And she's my everything. You know? Those sorts of things. Now, I'll say this about Rachel, right? Rachel makes a terrible God. She does. She makes a terrible thing to put my hope in because she fails. And that's not a criticism. You fail. I fail. We fail. Rachel's going to fail. And she's going to fail bad. She's going to fail hard. There's going to come something that she's going to fail so much that it may even test our marriage. And so it's tough to put your hope in a person because guess what? Gonna fail you. And so if you're putting that amount of your life into another person, man, odds are it's gonna fail. And so what if it works? What if it works? What if you're the 0.001% of all relationships that works? What if you get it? Everybody I've talked to who's been in that place regrets the fact that they spent the majority of their high school and college life committed to a person and not enjoying just being able to be in high school and college. And of the even smaller percentage of people who have succeeded who haven't made that statement, they've all said, we could have waited for a little bit and it would have been just as good. And so what Jonah chapter 2 verse 8 says is that those who cling to worthless idols forsake their own mercy. And so even by you investing in those things, clinging to those things, hoping in those things, pursuing those things, even by you doing that, you're giving up the very thing that you're trying to get from it. So by having that thing as a part of your life, whether it's how your body looks, whether it's the skills you have, however popular you are, whoever says that they love you, by trying to put your hope in that thing and saying that this is how I'm secure, this is how I'm well, this is how I'm right, this is who I run to, this is what I pursue, this is what I give myself to, you end up giving up the very thing you're trying to get. And so Jonah chapter 2 verse 8 says that those who cling to it forsake their own mercy, but Ephesians 2, which we shared last week, says, but God, who's rich in mercy because of his great love with which he loved us. And so you can read those two together and say that those who cling to worthless idols forsake their own mercy, but God, who's rich in mercy because of the great love with which he loved us. And then Ephesians goes on and says in a gigantic run-on sentence that you're deeply loved by God and you can find your fulfillment in him. And if you ask any of the people who have a tag on who can serve as a I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt and then some, every one of them would say, of those four things and all the other things that we could cling to, we all are walking testimonies of what happens if you don't. And we've got stories that have walked through some muck and some mire and some unhappiness because we clung to other things and then found later on that, man, by clinging to that thing, we were killing ourselves. And so we wanted to kind of reset on that Jonah chapter 2 and say, man, are there idols in your life? Are there things that you're clinging to and putting your hope in? And odds are, if that's true of you, you can already feel the hole in your heart because of that thing. And the one thing it's going to tell you is invest more, give more, have more. And what you're going to find is every time you invest, give, and have, it requires more. And the one thing that's true of Jesus is that we can't even sustain the amount that he wants to give to us. So odds are you'll never be found wanting. All right, we're going to throw a map on the screen that shows where we've been at so far. Jonah's called from the middle there on the left, on the right side of the Mediterranean Sea. If you see Tarshish, it's kind of got a question mark saying, God only knows how far left that is. And then if you look at Nineveh, you can see it's in that green area right above the word Assyria. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate you. So I don't know if Jonah got dropped off at the beginning of the Persian Gulf. I don't know if the whale, the great fish, took a little swim up the river. I don't know how he got there. So he either got vomited and had to walk a long way, or he got vomited and was there. But either way, we're talking about a dude who's covered in vomit, doing some walking in one of the hottest and most miserable places on earth. All right? So let's go Jonah chapter 3, verses 1 to 10. We've got a Bible out there for you. If you want to read along with us, it's on page 376. So Jonah chapter 3, page 376. Let's dance for a little bit. Here we go. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message I tell you. So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a three-day journey in extent. So it means it took 3 days to walk it. And Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk. Then he cried out and said, yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown, or in 40 days, Sodom and Gomorrah is happening again. So the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. Then the word came to the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne and laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish? Verse 10, then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. The bottom line we've got for you tonight is just one word, and it's preach. Preach. Now, if some of you have grown up in some gospel churches, that should get you a little riled up and getting you screaming and saying, hey, if you haven't grown up in church, don't worry. But preach, bottom line. All right. Now, first week, week one, we shared a blank with you that we're going to remix on. All right. And it's God flexes through people. God flexes through people. God has continually shown in the Bible that if he wants to put his glory on display, if he wants to show his power, if he wants to show his might, if he wants to declare to the nations who he is, he doesn't just show up in a room and go, told ya. He says, hey, there's this person on the other side of the world. I'm going to call them and send them, and I'm going to use my power through them. So God flexes through people. God's supernatural power, all powerful, all awesome, all great, is done through people. So if you're waiting for God to do something supernatural to show himself, you're going to be waiting for a long time. But if you commit yourself to God, I want to be the person in whom you show your glory and power, then get ready, brace yourself, all right? So now Jonah 3, 1 to 4, we'll put it back on the screen. You don't need to read it. Here's what God does by flexing through this dude named Jonah. It says, now the word came to Jonah the second time, saying, arise to that great city and preach to it the message I tell you. So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a three-day journey in extent, and Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk. Then he cried out or preached and said, yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. So third blank we've got for you is preach the word. If we're telling you to preach something, you got to know what you're preaching. And so Jonah says, man, preach the words God has given to you. Jonah, say the things that I'm saying to you. Preach the word. If we have more time, I take you to 1 Corinthians 1, verses 17 to 29. It says, God didn't send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel. And so Paul says in 1 Corinthians, man, my mission on earth is to preach. I want to show you 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 2 to 5. The very first thing that Paul says, we're not going to show you, to Timothy, is he says this, preach the word, exclamation points. All right, so that's not like a, hey, preach the word. It's not like some little, man, if you get time, preach the word. Man, that's a scream. Like if you've ever got a paper that's gotten exclamation points, that would have like 17. And it's saying, preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season, which we'll deal with that in a little bit. But it just comes and says, man, all of these things are coming. Man, preach the word. And it even says that people aren't going to listen to people preaching anymore because they're going to want to have people tell them how awesome they are. And one of the things that comes up is when we cling to idols, we don't listen to wisdom in our life. We just listen to everybody who tells us how great we're doing. So we don't want to listen to somebody who says, you know, if you keep pursuing this thing the way that you're pursuing it, it's going to kill you and we don't think it's smart. You don't listen to that person. You listen to the person who says, man, that is so awesome. And I had somebody who was telling me the other day, they, you know, got into something and they started doing something. And there was a person who came and said to them, I think that this is the greatest decision you've ever made. And they were like, oh, that's so awesome. I agree. And just running off at the mouth about stuff. And I was just a fly on the wall. And so as there's this thing going on, the person who gave them that advice, they would say to you, I don't want my life to look like them. Like if I could plot my course, I would say steer away from that. Because a lot of the things that have come up in their life are ones that they're like, man, that ain't a good call. And so they said, if I could make a choice, I don't want it to look like that. And yet that's the person who they're saying, I know I made a good choice because they said so. You know, so even if you put something and say, hey, I'm doing this. If everybody says you're doing awesome and they are looking like you don't want to end up there, then you better check where you're headed, you know. Because if the people who you say, man, I want to be like Tyler when I grow up. Yeah, true. It's a good call. If you say, man, I want to be like Tyler when I grow up. And you say, hey, Tyler, I'm going to go do this thing. He's like, man, I just don't think that that's a good call. I think that's a bad choice. I think you're making a wrong decision by doing that. If you want to be like Tyler, then you should probably listen to what Tyler says. And so just check that. That was for free. Now, when it comes to preaching, when it comes to sharing, there's a lot of people who have shared this quote, and it's ultra lame, all right? So it's this. Preach the gospel always, and when necessary, use words. That shows up on church billboards all the time. And so the thing that you get from it is, man, I just need to be really sweet and awesome. And so my preaching of the gospel is just going to be this. You know, like your preaching the gospel is going to be, gotcha. All right, now I want you to play this back, all right? God says to Jonah, preach. Could you imagine if Jonah walks into Nineveh and is like, or someone's going to say like, hey, I just want to like love them until they ask me the reasons. So Jonah, why do you love us so much, man? Well, you know, I'm supposed to preach to you. What are you supposed to preach? 40 days and you're dead, sucker. Whoa. So there's this, Francis of Assisi has given a lot of people an out to say, I don't need to like use my voice. The problem with that quote and saying that about St. Francis of Assisi is he was a preacher. His trade was to preach. So I just want to give you a real quick recap on his life. The first is that he vowed to get the gospel out of Italy. So he said, my life's mission is to have it get out of Italy. All right? So he said, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to preach. Now, this is at the time of the Crusades. A Christian man going to Jerusalem and occupied by Islam. But he's like, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. He was shipwrecked on the way and had to swim back. All right? So that's like, swims back. Now, what happens when he gets there? He's like, I want to go to Morocco. And so when he's on the way to Morocco, he gets deathly ill. Like, my life is going to end. So he stops in Spain and hangs out in Spain for a little bit. Now, in 1219, this is by far the coolest. The man who set out to conquer Jerusalem and to kill Christianity was the Sultan of Egypt. And he said, I want to go get that guy to love Jesus, or I'm going to die trying. So what does he do? He goes down and gets in front of this dude and starts preaching to him. And it's said that the Sultan of Egypt placed him in burning fire and he didn't like light up. And so he didn't die. So he just stood there in burning fire and was like, Sultan. Jafar. He was just sitting there as the Sultan of Egypt. And so he's like, I'm either going to convert him or I'm going to die as a martyr. What happened? The very guy who set out to kill Christianity decides to follow Christ and gets baptized. Now, preach the gospel and when necessary, use words. I think clearly St. Francis of Assisi didn't walk in and go, I ain't saying nothing. I'm not going to, no. No, not at all. No, he got in there and was like, you ready? Here we go. Giddy up. And said, hey, I'm going to preach the gospel. And it's not indicative of, oh yeah, just sit there and do nothing. It's, man, let the gospel be a reflection of your life. Let when you preach not be something that you're like, oh, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to go to hell. And then you're out, you know, on your way to hell yourself. It's not one of those things. It's like, man, if you're going to preach, then giddy up and let's do the thing. All right, so now here's Jonah, and he's going into Nineveh. Now, we're going to throw up a map of Nineveh for you. Here's what it looks like. It's 3 days wide. Again, so he starts at the bottom, and it takes 3 days to walk up. In the future, there's going to come a conquering army who's going to block both of the walls and dam the river, and it's going to flood the city to cause all the people to get conquered and killed. It was a really sad story. And so God says, go to this city, and I want you to preach. Jonah 1:1-2 says, now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh and preach, right? He's got this, go get there, go preach, go say something. Now, we told you in the first week that Jonah's got a lot of satire. This, I don't know, some weird things are happening. So what happens when people preach? In the Bible, anytime someone gets called by God to go preach, they're going to preach to a group of people, and nearly every time the people want to kill them. So Joseph, right? God says, hey, Joseph, I want to tell you something. One day you're going to rule and reign over your brothers. He tells his brothers, they sell him into slavery. Moses gets called by God and says, I'm going to go set my people free, but you need to go tell everybody. So Moses goes and he's like, hey, God told me to throw my staff on the ground and I'm going to show people what's up. So what happens? He throws his staff on the ground and he's like, oh, it's a snake. And then they say, oh, guess what we can do? Snake. And he's like, and walks out. So Moses has this internal conflict. Elijah spends his life running away from Ahab and Jezebel because he's going to be killed. Isaiah is told that by God, you know, Isaiah, the guy who's like, who's going to go for us and who shall we send? And Isaiah's like, oh, me. And then God tells him, you're going to go and people won't listen. I'm like, but what? And then he gets sawed in half. Good times. Jeremiah, his life is so terrible, he's called the weeping prophet. Why? Every time he goes to preach, people beat the crap out of him until he almost dies. First time Peter preaches, Jesus calls him Satan. The first time Stephen preaches, he's stoned to death. And when Paul preached, he was stoned to death by a city, but then some guys came and picked him up and shook the dust off and was like, I'm out. So Jonah's got this weird thing that happens, and so we won't read verses 5 to 10 again, but you can put down this, Blake, preaching makes believers. Why? Everybody but Jonah in the Bible, when they go to preach, something awful happens. And what happens to Jonah? When Jonah goes and preaches, everybody says, we confess and believe and worship him. And so Jonah's in the place of, man, I've seen this history of people who come to preach, and then all of a sudden, I'm called to preach, and now I'm going to go. And I love what verse 9 says in this chapter. It's the king of Nineveh. And he says, man, who can tell if God's going to turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish? His thought is, we confess, we believe, we know him to be true. And if he ends up killing us in 39 days, then okay. And there's Jonah preaching. And he's the exact opposite of what's happened to everybody. Again, so the next blank we've got for you is, who knows? And who knows what's going to happen when you preach? Who knows what's going to happen when you share? Who knows what's going to happen when you open your mouth? You could be rejected. You could be denied. You could come out looking like a fool. And I'll tell you, everybody I know who's ever preached, the first time always goes terrible. So welcome to the club. So who knows? And then verse 10 says, then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil ways, and God relented from the disaster that he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. So the last blank we've got for you tonight is God saves. God saves. God saves. Now, if God wanted to destroy a city, I think he could do it. I think Sodom and Gomorrah is evidence that if God wants to destroy somewhere, he can just giddy up and destroy it. And if God wants to destroy people, in the book of Daniel, it says that the king was sitting in a room and God wrote on the wall, I'm going to kill you. So I think if God wanted to kill people, he would. When God calls Jonah and he says, hey, arise because their wickedness has risen to me and soon the city's going to be destroyed, Jonah doesn't go saying, guess what? God's going to kill you suckers. It's this proclamation that says, this doesn't change. Yeah. But what happens every time someone gets hit with the fact that they're aware, man, am I wicked? Yes. Am I sinful? Yes. Am I deserving? Yes. But God who's rich in mercy. But God who's rich in mercy. But God who's rich in mercy. So anytime someone preaches, anytime someone declares, anytime someone shares, there's this thing that happens in the heart of people, whether they want to acknowledge it or not, that there's an agreement that says, man, if I am to say I'm sinful, I agree. If I'm to say that there's things in my life that need to be amended, I agree. If grace is by Christ alone, then I agree. And there's something that happens in the hearts of people in all of history that if you look at Jonah, he started at a place in town that took 3 days to cross. In seconds, he said, hey, guess what? This is about to turn ugly. And the whole city, within the day, says, we all confess and believe and declare to him he's God. So much so that the king gets word, all of this is happening in my town. And the king says, we confess and believe and know him to be God. How does something that takes 3 days to cross and walk in it spread within a day? And that's the power of the gospel. And so the book of Matthew chapter 28 says this. Jesus came and said to them, all authority has been given to me in heaven and earth. Go therefore and make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Matthew chapter 28 doesn't refer to people who are in my profession. It refers to every person who loves Jesus. So if you love Jesus, guess what? He says to you, go and preach and make disciples of all people. And so some people will say, well, you're the preacher and that's your job. Yep. But even if this wasn't my job, my mission in life is still preach the gospel and make disciples of all nations, starting in my town, moving out to the surrounding areas and continuing out to the very ends of the earth so that all people in all nations from all races would be able to accept, confess, and believe in the gospel of Christ. That's the mission. So you don't have an out tonight.